Case number 22-1287 et al. J.G. Kern Enterprises, Inc. Petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Baskin for the petitioner, Mr. Sauter for the respondent.
We're just going to hold for a moment for the Judge Edward Files didn't seem to have made it to the bench. And self-help is often the way to get things done. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Baskin. You may proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. And I'm Maurice Baskin on behalf of J.G. Kern Enterprises against the National Labor Relations Board. I've asked to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The board in this case has refused to honor the wishes of the overwhelming majority of Kern's employees who signed a petition 4 years ago, overwhelming majority of them, saying they don't want to be represented by the union anymore. They delivered that petition to the employer 54 days after the certification year expired. There had been an election, they were certified, and there's something called the certification year. I'm sure you've all read about it. And it makes an irrebuttable presumption, but that year had expired for 54 days.
The ULPs occurred within the year.
Sorry?
The ULPs occurred within the year.
Correct. And the board relied on those ULPs.
Which they have done a lot over the years. That's the rule. They can extend the certification year if the ULP refusal to bargain occurs within the certification year.
Yes.
That's old news.
Yes. And according to the Tenneco decision, the master slack factors are supposed to be used to determine the whether they are serious enough.
The board has never overruled the precedent that I just mentioned. That is still good law. There's nothing in board law that overrules the certification year rule. Nothing.
Correct. Well, it depends on which rule you're talking about.
I'm talking about the rule that was applied against you.
If you commit violations
during the certification,
there is the power to extend the certification year. But if you take a look at the Champion Home Building case, as well as the Garden Ridge case cited and relied on in Tenneco, they indicate that you don't automatically extend it. That's really where we are perhaps need to have a clarification.
If the board had prosecuted your client based on the other rule, they had two theories that they could have applied. There's nothing that prohibited them from using the theory that they used, which was that there was a ULP that occurred during the certification year. They can extend the certification year. Old news. That law has never been overruled by the board, ever. It is still good law.
It depends on which precedent you're referring to.
So I take it you're not disputing that an extension of a certification year is an appropriate remedy in a case, for example, where there's a period of time when an employer refuses to bargain. I mean, just putting aside the facts of this case, and I know you contest whether substantial evidence supports that here, but if you had substantial evidence showing, let's say, employer refuses to bargain for 6 months, and the board finds that the remedy for that is an extension of the certification year bar, you don't dispute that that's an appropriate remedy in that case?
Correct. It can be that remedy in the case that you've described.
And here I take it that your challenge really is to the retrospective extension of the certification year bar to invalidate the Section 7, the exercise of the disaffected members' Section 7 rights to decertify. And if you're right about that, then there's no union, there's no extension of the certification year bar, just the case is over, right?
Correct.
Right. And so then the question is, how do we think about, for example, we have the Veritas precedent that says Master Slack can coexist with extension of certification year bar. And I take your distinction of that to be, well, there was a prior order in place already extending the certification year bar. And that's not the case here.
Correct.
So that's huge, the distinction you
recognize. Huge distinction.
Yeah.
Except that there are cases that the board cites a number of them, that do have this particular scenario, and the board is able to use the precedent that you don't want it to use. The dissent understands that. The dissent's argument is to suggest that they seem to be inconsistent, shouldn't have both on the books, but the board has certainly applied the rule in these circumstances. You simply are trying to get us to, without the board having done it itself, overrule the situation. The board has had cases in the past consistently when it has been brought to the board, as this case was brought to the board. The board has consistently applied the rule against you. You can have an extension of the certification year looked at after the certification year if the ULP occurred during the certification year. That's not news.
That's prospective. Only prospectively.
What? So what about, I'm probably missing something because you're way more of an expert in this than I am, but in Franks Brothers, the old Supreme Court case, the court affirmed the board doing exactly this. The union had lost a majority, and yet the board said that there had been a refusal to bargain, and the only way to remedy that was to impose an affirmative bargaining order. But the only reason they reached that issue was because they invalidated the union's lost majority and said, so they did both things. And they did it, I think, in that case, in the kind of backward-looking way that as that's different from what we affirmed in Veritas.
I don't think that the scenario is the same. And I think that since, addressing Judge Edwards' point, since Master Slack, in the 21st century, in this century, there has been no case in which the board has relied on the Whispersaw precedent, which is what we're talking about here, a vacated decision. There is just no case like it where there, as there are cases in the certification year that have applied the Master Slack standards. That's the issue. It's not that they couldn't do it, but they have to do it with applying those standards.
I know it's in the last century, the 1998 board decision in New Madrid Nursing. That case seems to me like Whispersoft, and I take your point that the court, in Whispersoft for separate reasons said there's not a violation here, but the board's reasoning stands there. But doesn't New Madrid Nursing apply a similar analysis to retrospectively, both to apply this, to extend the certification year bar, and also to invalidate an intervening loss of support for the union?
Yes, of course, not much of a board analysis. They just adopted the ALJ decision. The ALJ has one mention of Whispersoft with no elaboration.
Whether they use the term Whispersoft or not, I think I guess the question is, isn't the remedial power to do this, whether you tag it as Whispersoft or something else, longstanding?
But how can you have, the board has created two lines of precedent. At best, we would submit they've abandoned the Whispersoft precedent.
I see that's the frailty in your argument. When did they abandon it? I understand exactly what you're trying to do. This is a good way to overturn board precedent when they haven't done it themselves. They have not abandoned this line of precedent, and they've had opportunities in a number of cases which they could have. It was never raised. It was raised on the list of top and the board prosecuted. They've never not when it's come up. Never.
They abandoned it when they issued the Champions case, when they issued the Garden Ridge case, when this
not
court...
Not by its terms. So why isn't this the way to think about it? And I think that board member Ring's footnote at the end of his opinion is telling. He says, I appreciate that there are unfair labor practices that involve interference with bargaining, refusal to bargain in good faith, that might not taint the employee's election, choice to repudiate the union, because they may not even be aware of it. He says, but there are other ways to deal with that. But I think the board majority is saying where the unfair labor practice is, about bargaining
and impedes or frustrates the certification year. In that subset of cases, the certification year bar, including the retrospective, like in Hotel Madrid and Whispersoft, is appropriate. Now, there are reasons not to go straight there. There are reasons potentially to do a master Slack analysis, and partly it's what you started with, I think correctly, that the dissenting employees, you know, the Section 7 right, you know, employees need to have a chance to choose to repudiate the union if they want. But if you think conceptually about can master Slack, you know, cohabitate or be, you know, persist consistent with the Hotel Madrid and the Whispersoft analysis, why doesn't it make sense that they're overlapping but distinct analyses that may be appropriate in different situations?
Frankly, for the reasons that the dissent said, address that point squarely.
He overstates it though in saying that there's always a toggle choice, because I don't think every master Slack violation would support extension of the certification year bar.
Can I also ask about master Slack? You seem to be relying on that as kind of the exclusive way to look at this case. And I'm just curious as to how is that.
Because the board itself has said so. Board itself
said that's the only way you can approach the board situation.
Because they were confronted with these almost identical facts. That's what precedent is. It's cases that are dealing with the same facts. And they cited and relied exclusively on master Slack. No, they did not
Look, the strength of your argument, I'm sorry, Brody. The strength of your argument is there are some cases in which the board could have applied Whispersoft and they chose to go master Slack. That's true. That's absolutely true. It's perplexing. One wonders why. But there are also cases where the opposite is true, where they could have applied master Slack and they applied Whispersoft. And they have never abandoned the Whispersoft precedent, never. And you're trying to say, as you honestly said, well, if you look, it depends on which century you're looking in. That's not the way to determine the applicability of precedent. Master Slack is an appropriate precedent. And what you don't like is that the board has a prosecutorial choice. There's nothing in the law that says the board has to prosecute by master Slack or Whispersoft. I understand why you'd rather go the way you are pushing, because it's a tougher burden on the board to make the case. No question. Certification year precedent is, it's a presumption. That's right. They've never abandoned that. It's not our role to remove precedent when the agency hasn't considered it and made that decision. It's very clear they haven't changed. The majority in this case says we are not abandoning that precedent. The majority is clear. That's what the board said in this case. We are not abandoning precedent.
And it's I first say it's not just
that's
us.
In this century.
It's not just us. It's the dissenting opinion. A member.
The dissenting opinion is only that. A dissenting opinion. It is not precedent. And the board majority, confronted with your argument, rejected it.
And they rejected
your argument because the dissent raised it. And the majority said, no, there is precedent on the books. We've always had the choice to go as we choose. And this was an appropriate application in their view. And that's the way the case was prosecuted.
But reviewing the course of precedent with regard to Whispersoft, it has to be viewed as discredited. Not only was it vacated by the Ninth Circuit, it was denied enforcement. It was ignored by the board. This notion that it was always there
the Ninth Circuit
to be used.
Did not repudiate precedent. There were factual issues there.
And what about New Madrid Nursing Center, which I know there are subtleties in these cases, but I read it to present the same situation. And to the extent you're relying on the Ninth Circuit's vacator.
But the decisions that repeatedly issued after the Madrid case, after Whispersoft, they ignore it. The judge in this case ignored it. The general counsel ignored it. No one thought it was a precedent, except it's pulled out of nowhere.
They chose not to prosecute. That's within their authority. The general counsel can use any available theory to go after a ULP. That's what you don't like. I understand what you're arguing. But we can't overturn an established precedent. And there's nothing in the law that says the board can't pick which theory, prosecutorial theory, it wants to pursue to go after unfair labor.
And based on what standards? Your own decisions have said the board cannot create two lines of precedent. And that's what's happened here. There's no rationality to when they would pick one versus the other. There's no notice to the company. There's no notice to the employees who filed their petition.
No, I was just going to say on the notice point, and that would, you know, be the basis, I think, for your distinction of Veritas, that, you know, it's one thing if there's an extension of the bargaining year in place and everybody knows. It's another thing if that hasn't been decided yet. But here there were pending complaints by the general counsel specifically asking for extension of the certification year bar and explaining the basis of that. So at the time that the 1 year since election expired, it surely the employer's on notice that that's a potential remedy.
Well, a pending unfair labor practice charge complaint is significantly removed from an actual order. The
but it does,
board does
notice.
Sometimes not prevail on those.
Right. It does give notice of, you know, the possibility that's a remedy.
It's not been held to be. I take your point, but we don't think it alters the situation. Certainly the employees sort of.
It would be helpful to me in thinking about the relationship between these two lines of precedent. In your view, the conflict between them, the reason they can't coexist is what?
Well, because if you use the Whispersoft precedent, then it is an irrebuttable presumption, and that if you use MasterSlack, it's a rebuttable presumption. They are in diametric opposition. They're not alternate.
They further different purposes.
But what about if the irrebuttable presumption is based on the reasoning of the court, the Supreme Court's cases, Franks and Brooks and the older cases that explain, in effect, it's like a categorical taint to say if the union has been unable to function
right
in the way that the employees might have reason to expect it to function in their behalf during that protected
certification year,
then even if the employees aren't aware of it, so it's not sort of bearing in that way, it's presumptively bearing on their satisfaction with the union. So I'd love to hear, because I know you have a different way of looking at that, but to me, they seem not inconsistent. And I do appreciate that MasterSlack requires a kind of showing that the Whispersoft analysis doesn't, but I think only certain kinds of unfair labor practices would support the Whispersoft remedy. So it also requires a different showing that is maybe inaccessible in certain.
Well, the way the board has described Whispersoft, it doesn't matter what kind of unfair labor practices they are. Whereas
right,
the whole point,
if you can show a taint. So that is kind of a subset of unfair labor practices. And conversely, I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but conversely, under Whispersoft, the kind of unfair labor practice that would show a sort of a de facto suspension of a portion or all of the bargaining year, not every unfair labor practice is going to support that either.
But if that were true, then all of these other cases, they're dealing with the exact same thing about a delay in bargaining. That's really the only the reference was made that, well, the union's can't doing its job or something. It was just because of a delay in bargaining, which happened quite with some frequency. And the board has looked at those kind of cases and always in decades, won't use the century, has found that the MasterSlack principles apply to decide, did it cause the employee disaffection? Did it cause a taint? The Whispersoft, I don't want to call it a doctrine, it's a statement that it just said, no matter what, it doesn't give it any concern to the impact on the union or the employees, that it doesn't care whether it creates a taint. It just says, oh, well, you delayed bargaining, we're just going to automatically do it. That, I think, has been abandoned if not outright overruled.
It hasn't been overruled. I'm glad you smiled.
It has not been expressly overruled, but there is such a thing as abandonment by the board when they keep issuing decisions that say the opposite.
That's my question. Is it the opposite in the sense that if the board can come to agreement by saying in the cases where there's a delay of bargaining, and we can also show that it was in the consciousness of the employees that it tainted their attitude of the union, then why not do that? Right? It's if it brings the board together. I mean, like, if they had done a master Slack analysis here, maybe Ring wouldn't have dissented. So you could see reasons why they would say, well fine, we'll use that. But does it require them to abandon this other line of precedent, which has the policy of protecting that certification year and the productive interaction of the employer and the employees?
They don't have the right when they have repeatedly, not just Master Slack, repeatedly in five cases that the board acknowledged, the majority acknowledged five times in the certification year, the board has looked at issues of delay in bargaining and has applied the Master Slack standards to determine did it cause the disaffection.
And you're talking about Champion, Garden Ridge.
Yes. And Garden Ridge was cited specifically in the Tenneco case as the standard for within the certification year. No mention of Whispersoft there, and it was a very thorough opinion that explained the state of the law on...
No one raised Whispersoft. It wasn't prosecuted on those terms.
Well, what kind of precedent is that no one raises?
The board can prosecute on different theories depending upon the fact scenarios, and sometimes there's more than one theory. I certainly remember that much from my days in labor law. When there were alleged ULPs that arose, there may have been two or different ways that the NLRB could have prosecuted. You know that as well as I do. Well, this is an area. It's strange. I understand what you're saying, but the rationale is different. Master Whispersoft guarantees that the union, in fact, receives one full year of bargaining after certification. That's the theory of that prosecutorial approach. Whereas Master Slack concerns whether there's a causal relationship between the employer's unlawful conduct and the union's loss of support, a different theory. The certification year is longstanding. That notion that a union should have 1 year and should not have it interrupted is longstanding. The board has never walked away from it. And there are times when the prosecutor sees it and uses it for the reasons stated. You are right. There are times when the prosecutor could have used it and went with the master slack. So what? That's not an abandonment of precedent.
It's a certification year.
Yes.
Certification from the date of certification, not from the first bargaining session. And that's what's being applied by Whispersoft. They are trying to convert it. In fact, in the brief of the general counsel, they describe Brooks as making it a bargaining year. It's not called a bargaining year. It's called the certification year. They complied with that. They went 54 days beyond it before they withdrew recognition.
I disagree with the notion of that your client has not committed any unfair labor practices, but the board has explained that rationale and its analysis in that regard. So are you still holding on to that?
Well, we deny that any unfair labor practices occurred, but with the core issue here is that even if they occurred, they were not of the type that has resulted in a bargaining order under Master Slack. It doesn't prevent employees. The employees didn't even know about whether the cost issue and they the 10 months that went by happens to be exactly what the amount of time in Tenneco was. And was found not to be a reason for finding taint. So the issue is they're not causing the disaffection. That means the petition was valid and the employer was entitled to rely on it to withdraw recognition as the overwhelming majority of employees asked them to do.
And that's what I'd like to get to next is just kind of your remedy. If we were not to enforce the board's decision, then does that conclude the matter or are you suggesting that there's some type of remand?
We don't think a remand is necessary or desirable. It's been 4 years. The board has an opportunity to get it right. We maintain, or disagree, but we maintain that they got it wrong.
But these matters occurred in 2018 and 2019. So what does this look like in 2023?
Well, the withdrawal of recognition stands, and everybody goes on about their business. Proceedings concluded.
If we were to agree with your approach that WhisperSoft no longer existed, we would have to remand it to the board to apply Master Slack. We would have to create law that the board hasn't created and say, even though you haven't thrown out WhisperSoft, we have. Apply Master Slag, look at the record, and tell us whether there's a causal relationship. You're arguing there isn't. The board hasn't said that.
But the board, since the board chose not to...
No, that's not the way...
Well, that's at your discretion.
If you're saying the board, come on, answer my colleague, please. If the board, if your argument is the board applied the wrong law, what the circuit court does is to reverse and remand for application of the correct law. And that would be to apply Master Slag. And to determine whether the board, not whether you, board thinks on this record there was a causal connection between the withdrawal of recognition and ULPs.
That is an option available to you. The courts have taken different approaches. Don't know that there's a specific standard that applies. I think the question is whether it's in the best interest of all the parties 4 years after the fact to go through another 4 years to get this resolved. I hate to underestimate that. It's certainly going to cause delay. We would say needless delay. If the board had this opportunity to enforce the order on proper terms and chose not to, then, you know, we think it would be best for everyone to call it a day. But you certainly have discretion to choose to remand. It's in the dissent that invite a remand.
If I agree ad law principles correctly, we have an obligation to send it back to the agency to apply the law that it should have applied in the first instance. That's the law that this circuit applies all the time. We don't take it upon ourselves to say we think the employer would have won under Master Slag if we think Master Slag should have been applied. We would send the case back.
Well, what we have, if the board has gotten it wrong, is they have given no good reason to not honor the withdrawal. And so that is a way in which you could also rule. But frankly, either approach is better than the situation as it stands. Now, right now, it's a complete injustice to the employees and is depriving them of their rights. I'm not sure what time I have left, Buttle, but save what's left of it.
I give you A on persistence.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
We'll give you time for rebuttal. Morning.
Morning.
Mr.
Sauter.
Sauter?
Yes.
Hillard.
Thank you. Yeah. French names.
I know. Proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Greg Soter, Sauter. He goes both ways.
Really?
For the National Labor Relations Board. I'm Sauter in private, public Soter is. Thank you for, may it please the Honorable Court. Given the way the conversation's been going so far, maybe I'm going to take a little bit of an unorthodox approach and instead of launching into some opening statement, ask the judges if you have any doubt regarding the board's findings, that substantial evidence supports the board's findings regarding the unlawful delay of bargaining, the failure to provide information requested, and the refusal to discuss a mandatory...
I mean, the principal disagreement here is over which theory the board was resting on. One requires the board in its prosecution, if you're under Master Slag, to show a causal relationship. If you're using the certification here cases, WhisperSoft, all the board has to show is a ULP occurred during the certification year. Now you're applying this latter theory. Now the question, you understand the weirdness in this case. You prepared it, and it's the weirdness that the dissent points out. You're in a situation where WhisperSoft is, if you're in situations where WhisperSoft is clearly applicable, and the board chooses, as they have in a few circumstances, to go with the Master Slag causal relationship test, how am I, as an informed reader, to figure out why they do that here? I don't see how they overruled anything, because in none of those cases did they talk about WhisperSoft. So the board certainly has never grappled with
Are we on one theory or can are they mutually exclusive? They've never said it. But how am I supposed to think about it? That's kind of weird, and that's some of what the dissent is talking about. If you've got Whispersaw to use, that's an easy win. Why would you take on the burden of master slave?
Well, Your Honor, I think...
Why did they take on the burden?
Right. I think it goes back to the point that you made, which is prosecutorial discretion, not the board's, but the general counsel's. The general counsel comes to the board with a certain theory of the case, and the board applies that theory to the facts. And there are plenty of cases, such as David Sachs or the other one will come back to me, where the board said, you know, they overruled the administrative law judge, finding there was no violation, but then they refused the union or the employer's entreaties to apply another legal theory to the same facts, saying that it had not been brought to them from the beginning. In this case, just as in Whispersoft, the general counsel came to the board from the very beginning in the complaint, actually, asking for the board to impose a remedy consistent with Marjack and extend the certification year for the amount of period applicable. And
no, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I recognize.
When the ALJ choose, the ALJ was applied which? Didn't the ALJ apply master slave?
And then here in this case? In this case?
Yeah.
Yes, but the GC put forth both. The GC raised
both.
Yeah, they raised both. In fact,
and then the board said we're only going to consider the easy one.
Right, exactly. In fact, in the general counsel's hearing brief, the general counsel said, if you find that the certification year should be extended, in that case, the withdrawal recognition occurred during the extension, and the withdrawal recognition is unlawful regardless of whether the master slack factors are met. So the GC was pursuing both theories.
So if the board had so chosen, it could have affirmed the ALJ's master slack approach, but basically done both, said that because we're gonna extend the bargaining year, that's not only from our, you know, from enforcement of our order forward, but it also means that the decertification is invalid. So that same result could occur with a master slack analysis.
I'm not sure.
So there's sort of under the New Madrid, Whispersoft, Marjack, Lamar,
right,
you know, analysis, Franks analysis. If there is an intervening decertification petition or actual decertification action before the board orders enforced, but the board determines that the certification year was effectively truncated by the employer's action. Going back to Frank's, one of the remedial options is to reject the intervening decertification, right?
The petition.
Well, petition or actual.
Or withdrawal of recognition.
Withdrawal of recognition.
Okay.
And so I guess I'm wondering why the two things, the remedy that is offered under Whispersoft and New Madrid and the like, that would also be available pursuant to a master slack merits analysis, right?
It would, Your Honor, in the sense that I don't know if the board would call it an extension of a certification year or a simple bargaining order.
Well, there's the bargaining order in this. I mean, you wouldn't have, if it weren't an extension of the bargaining year. I mean, that's why I think Mr. Baskin is so focused on the extension of the certification year bar, because if it's just an affirmative bargaining order, well, there's no union to bargain with unless you invalidate the decertification.
Well, unless you invalidate the withdrawal recognition, yes.
Yeah.
And under master slack, you can't withdraw recognition based on a tainted petition. Right. So if the petition is tainted by the employer's action,
done.
The withdrawal is unlawful. The union
also,
is still there.
So that's out of the way. And then you can have an affirmative bargaining
order.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Puts in focus what Mr. Baskin's concern is that there's a level of taint that needs to be shown under Master Slack. Now, as I read the cases, it may be that not every Master Slack case is a case in which, for example, an affirmative bargaining order is appropriate. It depends on whether the underlying unfair labor practices also interfered with a portion of the bargaining year. Is that your understanding?
Master Slack is not tied to the certification year, Your Honor.
But WhisperSoft is.
WhisperSoft is.
And what I'm saying is, because Master Slack is not tied to the certification year, are there cases in which an affirmative bargaining order? I mean, I think the answer is yes. There are cases, I think my colleague has written one such opinion recently. There are cases in which there could be a taint under Master Slack, a decertification could be invalidated, but there's no affirmative bargaining order because the certification year bar was honored, even though the election was tainted.
So let me go back just a little step.
Which are you proceeding under, WhisperSoft or Master Slack? Because Master Slack, you got to show a causal
right. Action. Under Master Slack, you show a causal, and that's why the election results are thrown out. It's because of taint.
Not the election.
Not the election.
The decertification.
The decertification.
Right.
And when you say not, isn't a decertification pursuant?
No, it's a petition. A petition. The union, the employees come to the employers, say, majority of us have signed this petition. We want to get rid of the union. And therefore, we want the board to hold an election to show that we no longer want a union here. So it's a preliminary step prior to the
So in this case, there was a petition.
Yes.
But the union remains in place.
Because the union, what will happen is there will be
There was no decertification petition and there was no board action on it.
There was a decertification petition.
I'm sorry. Elementary, but it's
not
to me.
No, not at all. Believe me, my head hurts. There was a decertification petition. The way the proper way to handle that would be for the employer to say, the employees say they don't want the union anymore. We're throwing up our hands. We're going to ask for the board to decide this.
They petition the board.
They petition the board, or the employees petition the board. The board has to come in and figure out what the status is here. Do the employees still want the union or not?
And that has not happened in this case.
No, because the employer jumped the gun and withdrew recognition. And now
the
you're
in. Withdrew recognition, but that's, and is so is the status quo that there is no recognition? It's just something they can do unilaterally?
So it's something they can do unilaterally at their own peril. If they're in the situation they are here, and the board finds that they unlawfully withdrew recognition, well, they have to face the consequences.
If it's within the certification year,
right,
and the consequences are most severe, which is what the other side's fighting. They don't want that presumption that you can't do that in the certification year, and you have caused the union to lose what the law says they're entitled to, is 1 year of good faith bargaining. You took that away.
Exactly. And not just any year of good faith bargaining. The first year, that this is a unique moment in the collective bargaining relationship. This will never happen again.
I appreciate that. I've read the Supreme Court cases. I've read all the other board precedent on this. So it's your position that because there was a complaint pending that had asked for extension of the decertification year, that should put J.G. Kern on notice when it withdraws recognition, that actually the wiser thing to do at that point would be petition for an election, because that would cover them better if the petition to extend the decertification, if the complaint seeking extension of the decertification year succeeded. Like how is the employer, if the employer thinks, you know, these unfair labor practice claims are going to come in our favor. We bargained in good faith. We didn't do the things that the GC charges us with having done. We see that there's a petition to decertify. Our options here are withdraw recognition unilaterally or petition the board. Is there any greater protection? Is there any third option? And is there any greater protection for the employer in that uncertain moment?
Well, the greater protection is to petition the board for an election to resolve the issue.
And why? And would that resolve the issue?
If the board, if there is a question as raised by the employee's petition that they do no longer want the union to represent them, then a board supervised election will resolve the issue.
And is like one arm of the board going to know what the other arm is doing? Like, would the unfair labor practices necessarily be resolved before the decision about whether to hold an election?
I don't want to step out of my, of this case too much, but I think that obviously assuming that there would first have to be an analysis as to whether the petition is legitimate, whether it, or if it's tainted by the employer's unfair labor practices. If it is, then the petition itself is unlawful and you don't have an election. However, if it turns out the employees have sua sponte of their own accord without undue influence decided that they want to get rid of the union, then the election goes forward.
That's so in the process of deciding the petition for an election, the board would decide whether the decertification, the employee's petition was tainted, but they wouldn't decide whether it occurred, whether an extension of the bargaining year was warranted.
You were just talking about this very specific situation of, whether the petition is lawful or not, or, when the election would follow. If the decertification petition is tainted, then the board remedies that by saying you have to bargain with the union.
Right. But if there's no, if there's a petition and there's not the kind of unfair labor practices that would influence, that would necessarily meet the master select
petition.
My question is, how conceptually does the board think about the whisper soft type issue in the context of deciding whether to grant a petition for a decertification election?
I mean, isn't that, I want to add to the question.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
The theory of whisper-soft in the certification year is you have to allow the union unimpeded to have good faith bargaining for 1 year. That's what the fight is if anything goes to the board. One side's going to be saying the employees have lost interest. The other side's going to be saying we didn't get a full year because 3-4 months ago, before all this was being filed, they wouldn't give us information. They wouldn't agree to any meetings. They wouldn't talk to us. They spit at our representative. We never had an opportunity for 4 or 5 months to bargain. So all the stuff about the petition really is looking at that. Did they get for a year an opportunity to bargain? And if the board finds, it either could be a ULP filed against the union, if I remember this correctly, ULP filed against the employer saying, they won't talk to us anymore. They've withdrawn recognition because they think the employees are gone, or the reverse. The union or the employees come in and file a petition for decert. The question is the same. Did the union during the certification year get the benefit of a full year? And if not, the board has traditionally extended the year and told the union, even though it may go on forever, years later, months later, they say, now give them the 4 months you didn't give them. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And the answer for you is unequivocally yes. For Judge Pillard, I guess what I'm getting back to your issue is if you have a decertification petition that occurs in the context like this one, where there was a delay of bargaining, where the union alleges that it did not get its full 12 months of bargaining, then the board will resolve that, because if that is the case, you don't even have to look at, whether whether the petition was tainted or not. It just happened during the extension of certification. Right. Now, as you, I was going to ask if maybe you were a board member in a prior life, because you quite astutely pointed out that sometimes the board will go with one theory of liability over another because that's how they can all agree to find a violation.
In that regard, though, are we needing to put into the opinion whether we're driven by WhisperSoft or Master Slack?
Well, the board relied solely on WhisperSoft to decide this case. So I think yes, if you enforce the board's order, you would be.
Let's be clear in this. The board has not made Master Slack findings.
No.
Counsel, your opposition is correct. There are no causal findings here.
No. And I agree with your point earlier that if you were to reverse the board, the proper avenue would be remand or a Master Slack analysis.
Determine whether or not the ULPs affected the loss of employee support.
Exactly.
That's the Master Slack test.
Exactly.
I think my colleagues probably know this and they would tell me, but I'm going to ask you, what is the difference between a MARDAC remedy and an affirmative bargaining order? Is there any?
A MARDAC remedy is an extension of the certification year, as opposed to an affirmative bargaining order that can happen, you know, as I was saying earlier, there's only one certification year. An affirmative bargaining order can be given at any time later in the relationship. MARDAC remedy is specifically the certification year.
And yet the MARDAC situation, there was no derecognition of the union. And so it didn't have the part that I take it Mr. Baskin is most concerned about, which is invalidating or reviving the union as the representative. So that wasn't an issue in MARDAC.
In MARDAC, the issue was that the employer had petitioned to decertify the union because it believed the employees no longer.
So that's recognized. The answer to my prior question. Okay, this is coming together.
Okay.
Thank you. And
I wish I could have short.
So, but an affirmative bargaining order in this context is not really different functionally from MARDAC because the reason that they're being given more bargaining is because they're extending the.
So it's not functionally different, but it is different in the sense of.
MARDAC, it has a certification year bar, affirmative bargaining order, not necessarily.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Well, once there's a decertification bar, you have to bargain. I mean, the certification year, the rule in the certification year is the union has majority status and the employer has to, during that year, to recognize and bargain with. Those are the two things.
But
so functionally,
whether you're in the certification year or not, you have a duty to bargain. So that's why I'm trying to understand what an affirmative bargaining order is if it's not the duty that's there anyway, which is you have to bargain with the union when your employees are represented.
So
certification year is over.
Yes. Right.
Nothing happened.
Right.
And the union's still around.
Right.
And then the employer, a few months, whatever, after the certification year, says, I have a whole bunch of petitions from the employees saying they don't want this union anymore. The union says, after the certification year is over, you did all kinds of bad things. We were still there, presumptively the bargaining agent. You refused to talk to us. You fired some people who were union leaders, all kinds of things. So the fight is going to be, is there any causal connection between the ULPs and the alleged loss of some employee support, right?
Yes.
And if the employer loses, a bargaining order will issue, right?
Yes, exactly.
And so it's a way of holding off a looming petition for a decertification election.
It's basically it's a way of saying, you know, from now on for a specific amount of time, the union is once again presumed to have majority status and you have to bargain with it. Now, there are reasons, I'm sure there are reasons the board refers to the two of them separately, besides the fact that one occurs right after the certification year, there are probably some nuances. But for the purpose of this, of our discussion here, it's more or less the same thing. The remedy is the same. You have to recognize and bargain with the union for a certain amount.
And then I know we're keeping, neither of you are expected to be here this long, but
where to go?
Is there any If we held that the board could only impose certification or extension before an employer's withdrawal of recognition, in other words, only we would limit the Whispersoft type remedy to
a Veritas situation.
A Veritas situation, exactly. Is there any, how feasible is it that the board could provide remedies to unfair labor practices within the certification year?
Well,
and do an extension that's not retrospective in the way that Mr. Baskin is telling us is really painful.
to be quite honest, Your Honor, it wouldn't happen. The board is woefully understaffed, if I may say so. I mean, there's just no way to keep up with, especially right now, with these. And much as the board would love to decide these cases as they come, it takes time. And that is
in Veritas. And that was
In Veritas, what happened was that the employer withdrew recognition. The board found you violated the certification year. We're imposing a prospective extension, and then the employer again tried to withdraw recognition during the extension. So that's what happened, and that you can see how long that can take. And I wanted to get back to something that you had sort of been alluded to earlier. And the reason we're here right now is because, as you pointed out, it is very difficult for the board to resolve these issues in real time. And what the company is trying to do here, essentially, is to take advantage of the delays inherent in the administrative process to make an end run around the certification year doctrine and to avoid its duty to bargain. It's basically trying to take advantage of the fact that the board can't be everywhere at once.
But what about the notice concerns? I mean, if you're an employer, if you're a union, if you're employees that don't want union representation and you come to the putative end of the decertification year and you want to know how to act and not, you know, dig yourself into a deeper hole. And the general counsel has sought an extension of the decertification year. It hasn't been acted on. If you would give your best answer to Mr. Baskin's notice concerns, that would be helpful.
Don't do bad things during the certification year. I mean, that's
if it. That's already water under the bridge.
That's what the board's looking back at, right?
Well,
to get the extension.
That is basically the answer.
If you do bad things during the certification year and this all comes up afterwards, you're going to pay. And it's no winning argument for you to say under this approach, well, wait, we're already past the certification year. Too bad you did bad things there, and there's a presumption that it had an effect, and here's the remedy. We extend the certification year. That's the rule.
Now, if I may.
Things to add?
It is the way Judge Edwards says it sounds harsh, but you have to remember, this is when you're talking
nothing
about...
Nothing Judge Edwards says ever sounds harsh.
I'm the gentlest person on this board.
Absolutely. Especially today. When you're talking notice, you're talking about notice. You're not talking about due process, right?
Notice is an element of due process, last time I checked. Key element of it.
Yes, but it is an element once complaint issues. It is an element of the. It is not
practical.
There's no
work out with the doctrine.
Okay, but there's no. Unless maybe you could correct me. I don't think there is a due process requirement for an employer to know what legal theory the board is going to use against it at the time that it commits the unfair labor.
I'm asking a more practical question about.
No, I understand. I
duly noted. So in terms of whether you adopt or would tweak the explanation that my colleague gave, that, you know, the conundrum that Mr. Baskin's client finds itself in is no conundrum at all because it's a you know, pit of its own making. Or any other answer about that the safe thing to do is to petition?
This, the, The safe thing to do in this case would be, now, the safe thing to do in this case would be to ask for the board to step in. You have this petition going on. Now, the board is obviously going to, and not withdraw.
Because you're asking for.
Yes, and not withdraw recognition, and let all the charges and complaints and all that stuff be resolved by the board, and let the chips fall where they may. Now, the employer may find itself back in the situation where it is today, meaning with an extension of the certification year, because for one reason or another, you know, the petition was unlawful or whatever, but it will not have unlawfully withdrawn recognition.
Again, I'm at risk of displaying my ignorance. Do employers ever ask for decertification elections?
It happened in Marjac. That was a long time ago. But no, it does happen. It does happen. Yes, sure. I think it depends on the advice that they receive and on how certain they are of their standing with employees in the union.
Thank you.
With that, thank you very much. And we ask that the support of your vote. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Baskin, we kept you up here and used up all your rebuttal time, but we will give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, I'll be brief, because what's at stake here is the mode of analysis. Are you going to leave the regulated community rudderless with a board that is not a prosecutor, by the way? It's not prosecutorial discretion. The board is supposed to adjudicate cases that come before it. And you have in many, many cases said to the board, you've got to have your precedents match up. You can't just go off on a tangent at a whim because it's Thursday or for some other irrational reason. And there is no rationality to this. They have created a per se rule. I go back to what Judge Edwards, you described on what an employer could do is not do bad things. But you were describing the master slack test, which is how bad are they? Or in response, Judge Pillar, to what your question was, what could they do to protect themselves? Well, if you've delayed, you could make sure to cure that delay by engaging in two meetings a month over the rest of the 10-month period, finding 35 different agreements, making extensive progress towards resolution of the bargaining. And that should do it. And under Master Slack, it would. But when they pull out of nowhere this per se rule that says, once you miss that deadline of you didn't hold the first meeting for January 10th, why it wasn't January 9th or December 17th when the company representative said he was available, putting that aside, once that happens, it's over and you didn't even know it. Because we at the board can pick and choose the rationales when we feel like it. That's wrong. You said it's wrong, and we ask that you say it again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.